It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
Are you kidding me? Coming up on tonight's show, let me get your best let's go in the chat. We will have the man that predicted Lane Kiffin to LSU on with us at 6:30, Mr. Cooper Patagna of 247 Sports, who used to work in college football personnel departments. That's coming up. Of course, we got to talk about the topic of the past, I guess you could say, 5 hours. John Summerall was reportedly going to interview with the Florida Gators on Thursday. The report seemed kind of weird. And guess what happened? It gets retracted. And John Summerall is copying the great Nick Saban with a bunch of rat emojis, rat poison emojis, if you will. And here he is. The most important meeting I have all week. Wednesday night with the quarterbacks. So the John Summerall report felt weird for this reason, and as you can see, he's really egging on the joke here, is that he has been connected to every open or theoretically open SEC job, every one of them outside of the Florida Gators. So there was a report out there that Summerall would go to Ole Miss if Lane Kiffin indeed goes to LSU or Florida. Also, John Summerall's connections to the state of Alabama ties him to the Auburn job. There has been real smoke with that. And the truth is, the question I keep asking myself, would I be okay with John Summerall as the head coach of the LSU Fighting Tigers? And the answer to that is yes, I would be fine with it. It all comes down to price. And I keep going back to one very interesting thing that has been involved in the Lane Kiffin discussions, and it was also brought up in a Ross Dellinger report of Yahoo Sports, is that the NIL budget for LSU is actually going to increase. And it's crazy to think, and I want you to think about this just for a brief second. Who have LSU's best players been this year? It's all year one guys. Guys that we just paid to get here, whether it's a true freshman or whether it's a transfer. So that tells me one of two things. That number one, our actual coaches did not do the best job of developing our players that had been with the program for a few years. And then the second thing, if we did not put forth the effort to really hit the transfer portal, where would we be without A.J. Halsey? Where would we be without Monsieur Delane? Where would we be without Braylon Moore? Those are the really three big additions that you can argue those are the three best players on our team this year. And then you get to some of these other guys, especially with Gabriel Relaford going down. Where would we be without Jack Pyburn? And I try not to talk about Jack glowingly because I get hit with, well, it's because you guys are homies. And look, we love Jack. He's been on the channel. We love his father, who's become a really good friend of mine, Mr. Bill Pyburn. But Yeah, Jack's been really good. Where would we be without those guys? Even someone like Josh Thompson, who a lot of us think has performed under expectations. Well, imagine if we had to put another one of the failed offensive line prospects that we just could not develop to be a starter. We wouldn't be in a good spot. So no matter who the head coach will be for LSU, the single most important thing is going to be, what is our NIL budget? What is our plan for building a roster? Because the guy that has done more with the transfer portal than anyone else in the SEC is the guy that we are after right now. Because that is his mantra. I listen to almost every single interview that Lane Kiffin gives. And the one that's getting passed around the most is the Pat McAfee interview. And I get it. I understand it. But that was the one that everyone actually watched. A little bit earlier, Lane Kiffin went on his normal SEC teleconference. Every Wednesday, every single coach in the SEC does a teleconference. And he gave a no answer every single time he was asked about the LSU and Florida connections. He kept saying, I'm not going to comment on other jobs. But good job by Wilson Alexander and a few others who actually asked those questions today. But Lane's mentality is all about the transfer portal. That's just what it is. And he has been on top of that more than basically anyone else in this conference, and he deserves a lot of credit for it. One thing that I have heard just consistently, and once again, I'm not Pete Thamel, I'm not Ross Dellinger, I'm not homies with Scott Woodward or Jeff Landry or whoever. Okay, and obviously Scott's not the AD, but I'm just letting you know I'm not as high on the totem pole as many others, but I do hear things. When you do this for a decade and a half, you talk to people who do actually know things. One major point of emphasis with Lane is the NIL. Can we actually get the money to build rosters every single season? And I would even venture off to say that his salary is important to him, but his salary, whatever it may be, it's going to be at least $10 million per season, probably in that 13 per season mark. But when you really think about it, that number is significantly lower than what you need to build a roster. Obviously, you have $20 million that goes to the roster with the TV revenue sharing and all of that. But it's more than just that. What is your plan? What is your annual plan for me to be able to build a championship roster? That's going to be the answer. Okay, what is the question? Obviously, if we hire Lane, donations are going to fly in. They are going, obviously, I would donate a pretty sizable chunk of my low income, but I would definitely send some to the cause here because that would be that on fire about Lane Kiffin. Now, we get into, to me, one thing that has not been discussed in the Lane Kiffin pursuit, and I do feel it's not been discussed by any other YouTuber. And I've watched a lot of other LSU podcasts, national podcasts, and all of that. Pete Golding is a good defensive coordinator. He is a really experienced guy. He's from the Saban tree. Him and Lane obviously know each other. It was a shocking decision many moons ago that Golding left Alabama for the same exact position at Ole Miss. What would LSU do at defensive coordinator? All right, so there has been reports about what a Lane Kiffin staff would actually look like at LSU. Obviously, Lane would love to have Frank Wilson. I understand that the Ole Miss running backs coach, whose name slips my mind right now, didn't write it down here in my prep, but that's someone that Lane adores. So that can get, you know, a little frisky, if you will. But I think a lot of you want Frank Wilson to remain on the staff. I do think most of you would probably want Frank to remain on the staff more than anyone else. I know a lot of you want Corey or whoever else. But who would LSU's defensive coordinator be? That is a big question. Because I do think Pete Golding has mostly been good. Now, last year, he had a treasure trove of players. And I do think the only game that I felt was a terribly coordinated game was the LSU game, where Garrett Nussmeier tore him apart. I was very shocked at some of the decisions he made defensively, and I said that at the time when we cut the film study. So what would Lane's defensive staff look like? We probably wouldn't need to worry about the offensive staff. Charlie Weiss, of course, is a really good play caller. He's the highest paid offensive coordinator in the SEC. Him and Lane have a very good rapport. We talked about Charlie in the interview. I say the interview, but the film study we did yesterday on the biggest thing that Lane Kiffin solves if he actually comes to LSU, which to me is first the running game, but even bigger, our fourth down decision making and execution. Lane is absolutely amazing at that very thing. But Charlie has been such a big piece to what Ole Miss has been over the past couple of seasons. Yeah, it's a Lane Kiffin offense, but it's also a thing where Lane trusts him to call the plays that Lane probably wants to be running. It's probably a very collaborative effort as well, but Charlie does do a good bit of the shot calling over there in Oxford. Would we get him over? So there's a lot of different things that you would need to answer as far as Lane Kiffin is concerned. And I do think one downside for whatever Kiffin decides to do, because I have heard everything under the sun, that the deal is already in place. Lane has already agreed to the deal. And then, of course, Lane with his son, Knox, there's plenty of rumors out there that he's got to do a hat ceremony if he's going to go to Catholic High or if he's going to go to U-High. I mean, there's all these different things. But where I get concerned is I do think LSU will be fine with rebuilding a roster under Lane Kiffin pretty quickly. We know Lane can work the portal. We know Lane is a very well-connected coach. I would not be worried about the roster. I would be worried about the staff. I would be. Because, you know, it's a tough decision for the Ole Miss coaches during a very short period of time, whether or not they can come with Lane to Baton Rouge. And then we get into, hey, Ole Miss is telling Lane, hey, you have an ultimatum. We have got to know by the Egg Bowl what you're going to do. Well, what if Lane wants to go to LSU and he wants to bring staffers? Do you let those staffers that are going with Lane to LSU remain and actually coach the team in the college football playoff run? What if that happens? I don't know. It's a good question. But for me, the thing that I think Ole Miss is screwing up here, and I understand they do not want to be left at the altar with Lane deciding whether or not he's going to go to LSU or whatever he's going to do. I don't understand what Ole Miss is thinking, though, with this ultimatum saying, hey, we do not want you to coach here anymore if you are going to another school. Modern times call for modern solutions. And I think a thing that would piss me off if I was Lane is that, yes, I'm spitting in your face going to another school that we have to play every season if I choose to go to LSU. But I am the one that made your program relevant. I would be insulted if I was Lane Kiffin if they told me, hey, this team that you built, this program that you built, where we wouldn't even be sniffing a college football playoff if you weren't here, we're not going to let you finish the deal. And here's the thing about that. Obviously, if Lane is coming to coach the LSU Tigers, he needs to leave, right? We all think he needs to leave. I would be of the belief, let him finish this bitch out. Let him do it. I'm serious. That's how high I am on Lane, because I think he could come over and make it work. Well, Carter, what about the portal window? You're telling me he can't get ready for that while still coaching Ole Miss? Hey, Frank, I want you to be my personnel assistant. I want you to get a raise here. Build my roster. This is what I want. I think it is feasible for him to coach the team and also coach LSU. So I will save that because our guest coming up has been so spot on about this. And I actually owe Cooper a public apology because at the time I cut a short with Cooper giving his prediction that he thought Lane Kiffin was going to pick LSU a few weeks ago. But the biggest point of his whole prediction is that the thing that challenged him the most is the calendar, all right? And these national personalities, whether it be Stephen A. Smith, that just helicopter in, this was the same shit that people said a few months or years ago when Brian Kelly left Notre Dame and obviously Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma to go to USC. Those teams would have been in the playoff, right? So the thing that these people that don't know anything about college football don't get is that the college football calendar is the biggest mockery of the sport that we have basically in all of sports. Imagine going to any head coach in any other sport and saying, hey, right now, before the postseason, you need to build your roster for the next year. It would make no sense. It would make no sense. Imagine if you went to Andy Reid right now as he's trying to figure out if the Chiefs are going to make the playoffs or not. And he says, you know what, Andy, what is your opinion of Jordan Tyson of Arizona State? Because I know you need another wide receiver. Let me know if you want him to sign right now. Andy would be like, "What? Who the hell is that? I got to worry about Xavier Worthy catching the football now." Okay. So, you know, it's a weird thing. It's a weird, weird, weird thing. And Lane's a victim of it. He is a victim of the worst calendar that we have in all of sports. So, for right now, a little before we get into your comments, my prediction is still slightly in favor of LSU landing Lane Kiffin. Slightly in favor. You know, I said a few days ago when the visit actually happened, it was 50 LSU, 25 Ole Miss, 25% chance he goes to Florida. I would probably lower it a little bit to now 45 LSU, 35 Ole Miss, and 25 Florida. Okay, somewhere around that range, it might not actually add up to 100%, but the truth is, I still think LSU is in the slight lead, okay? So, there you go. Now, we're going to get to some of your comments. Tyler, what's good? He wants to know what's going on. Well, the big thing today is, of course, the switcheroo with John Summerall, all right? Now, next thing. I do want to clear this up because the biggest LSU-related thing was actually erroneously reported by a national reporter by the name of Peter Hamby. Don't know a whole lot about Peter. And he said something along the lines of there was a private fundraiser and there was an instance where Jeff Landry said he talked on the phone with Lane Kiffin for 2 hours about the head coach opening. So there's no video of him saying this. And Hamby also tagged Matt Moscona saying he was there. And Moscona said, I was there. But he did not say that. And then he also cleared up that Jeff Landry told Moscona, hey, I've not talked to Lane Kiffin on the phone at all. So some weird reporting. Did that happen or did it not? I don't know. I'm not putting it past anybody. I'm not. But it is relevant. So, do you want a governor talking to Lane Kiffin? You know, the one thing I would say, though, that I do think is somewhat relevant to that report from Hamby is that we did see, over the past weekend, Ron DeSantis at an Ole Miss game. Now, I always say this, not a political guy, especially here on PHL. All right, so anything that I say is not an endorsement of DeSantis or Landry, or it's not a, you know, put down of any of those gentlemen. What I would tell you, though, is that, you know, it wouldn't shock me if Landry called Lane. I would actually be somewhat in favor of that with Jeff assuring, hey, I'm going to let you do your thing. We had what we had happen. And then at the same time, if I'm Lane and I see Governor DeSantis come to Oxford for a game, I would want Louisiana's governor to care about me as well. All right. So, you know, once again, not the political. All right. I also made a joke the other day that Jeff is now the second most important Landry in the state of Louisiana. Just a joke, obviously. Landry Kiffin. And she's obviously a very powerful person in all of this. And, well, we see a few of you in the chat. Bring it up. Jay Madison says, ex-wife family prefer Gainesville. I keep seeing. All right, so I'll address this. I've seen this a few times. And I touched on it briefly. All right, so Landry is the daughter. Knox is the son of Lane Kiffin. So Lane's ex-wife is Layla Kiffin. And Layla has heavily invested interest in the state of Florida. She went to Florida. She was in a sorority at Florida. Her dad played at Florida. But I do think, wink, wink, nod, nod, that there are some assumptions being made that she prefers Florida over LSU. That is not what I've been told. I have it on pretty good authority that that is not what's been addressed to me. And this isn't me saying that just because I'm an LSU guy. I don't think that that plays as big of a role as you would think. I really, really, really don't. But I get that people would assume that. I really do think, to me, the biggest thing for Lane is the NIL package, that he could build a roster that is good enough to win a national championship. I would also say this, though. And this is an opinion I have given a gazillion times, to the point where people told me to shut up about it. But the guy that's about to join me actually agrees with this opinion. I don't think people realize how good that Ole Miss roster was last year. That was a superstar roster. Walter Nolan is one of the best SEC defensive tackles I have ever seen. In fact, what he did to LSU last year should not be legal, what he did to our offensive linemen. And that wasn't the only guy. They had 1,000 dudes get drafted. But what did Lane Kiffin say on McAfee? That was the one season I couldn't run the ball. If they could run the ball, I think there were only two teams that were on Ole Miss's level last year. Oregon, Ohio State. That's it. That's how good they are. Okay? Now, coming up next, the man who set Twitter ablaze last time he was on here. I do think, like I just referenced, there was one very poetic and I would say transcendent remark that he made that is at the center of all of this, and that's coming up right after this. Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LaBoardTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LaBoardTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LaBoardTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their 5 locations all throughout the Lafayette region.
Do you have somebody?
I do. I think it's Lane. fairly confident too. I give it like a 6 out of 10.
All right, Cooper. I want to first off issue an apology because I should have texted you. Hey, do you want me to put this out there? But you seem so confident. I felt like you could trust me in cutting a clip that makes you look good. But now you might be looking like Nostradamus if this actually happens.
Mm.
Now, two things happened in the next 48 after that actually went out. The first is the guy that I trust the most, who has donated millions to LSU football, called me the next day and said, "Who is this guy? What?" And I tell you, a call. I was like, and I've not talked to this guy in a while. And I was like, "Oh crap, dude, this could have real legs." And then the Jeff Landry thing happened. Okay, so now that all of that is settled, Cooper, how do you feel about this situation?
Same way I did last time, man. Maybe even a little bit more confident. You know, I think the longer that this plays out, the harder it's going to be for Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss not to find some type of reconciliation. I wouldn't call it that, but every day that goes by, I think that you don't get a commitment to Ole Miss from Lane, then I think that's obviously going to play out in the public opinion, and that's going to play out in the favor of both LSU and Florida. And right now, I would more than likely kind of put the money on LSU to be the betting horse.
This is where I'm sky high in your media career and your football acumen, though, is that you said right after that, the single most complex thing that people are not talking about at all are the logistics of this. And you said it's going to be a mess no matter what happens. You were so right about that. I mean, I think most people understood that. But you were basically saying, hey, this is going to become a you-know-what show. So your thoughts on how the calendar in all of this could shape out if Lane actually goes to LSU?
Yeah, well, part one is the calendar, obviously, with signing day being on December 3rd. I think you and I had the conversation. I don't think signing day in this NIL era of college football is what it used to be. I think LSU has lost one commitment. I think you and I talked about that. I think that has a lot more to do with the financial alignment inside the building there at LSU and what they've been able to do. And obviously the guys that they've been able to target and the guys that they've been able to keep in the boat. I think that just goes to show with where we are in college football. You know, I think the other part that comes up to mind a little bit is that this is obviously going to be very difficult for Lane Kiffin as he's in the midst of navigating a college football playoff run, and there's no right way to go about it. And the other part for Ole Miss's sake is that they are in the most competitive coaching hiring cycle that we've seen in a very long time. There's 12 openings right now in college football, and you're thinking about schools like Penn State, Auburn, Florida, LSU, and LSU is in a luxurious spot because of the success that they've had in recent years with their three national championships under the last three head coaches. And Ole Miss is in a difficult position because same with LSU, same with Florida, same with Auburn. If you miss out on Lane Kiffin, who's next? Now you have to go through a pragmatic process with a lot of different people involved, especially in Baton Rouge, to where you have to target that guy. And for Ole Miss, I would imagine the guy that makes a lot of sense for them is John Summerall, the head coach of Tulane, right? And John Summerall, who has been rumored, I'm sure we'll get into it, has been rumored and connected with Auburn. Obviously, the ties that he has to the state of Alabama. There was a smoke out there today that he was going to have a meeting with Florida tomorrow. That got shut down within an hour after that news initially came out. So I think Ole Miss is in one of those positions where they seem like they're coming off as the insecure girlfriend that wants the engagement ring, but really in reality is they need to do what's best for their future. So they have to find common ground. And at the same time, they can't push too hard because a solution that they want is obviously to keep Lane Kiffin around for a long time. So this is a delicate dance that we got going on here.
The strangest thing is Lane confirming that he's talking to Keith Carter, the athletic director, multiple times during the day, all right? And then Ole Miss has a bunch of very public boosters, right? The Realtree guy whose name slips my mind. What's his name? Is like one of their big – I think it's like Tyler Jordan or whatever. You know, it's frustration with that, and I totally get that. For me, though, let's say Lane does pick LSU or Florida or whatever. Could he conceivably still coach the team? I know he couldn't, but would you let him still finish that out if you were LSU or Ole Miss?
I think that'd be really difficult on the part of Ole Miss, just in terms of the type of connection and the type of, I would say, focus that you could expect from Lane Kiffin. It would not be fair to a team full of players that has competed and put themselves in a position to compete for a national championship that you do not have 100% attention of your head coach. And Lane actually went through something similar to this when he was offensive coordinator at Alabama.
Yeah.
And he took the head coaching job in the middle of a CFP run to go to FAU. And because he did not handle that situation correctly, Nick Saban decided to make a coordinator change and go to Steve Sarkisian for the national championship.
So I remember that. Yeah.
You know, you think about all the balls in the air and all the moving parts and the variables in terms of, I mean, we're talking about signing day, and then we're talking about staffing, and then we're talking about the transfer portal window that opens up just a few weeks later, January 2nd, for 2 weeks, not to mention the roster defense part, right? You have to not only go out and identify, establish a board, but you have to play defense as well, keeping key foundational pieces that already remain on the roster. That's a lot of work on top of being a head coach that then has to prepare his team to go out and compete for a college football playoff. It's not really fair to either parties. It's not fair to LSU or Florida. It's not fair to Ole Miss. And Ole Miss, in every right, whether they think that's Charlie Weiss Jr., whether they think that's Joe Judge, whether they think that's Pete Golding, in their mind, they say, hey, let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's, you know, good luck on your future. But we got to put our kids today in the best position to be successful, and also the guys tomorrow as well. Like, we got to get a coalition here and a unified front for the best of Ole Miss football and whatever that is. So I think both sides are looking for really to make a decision as quickly and as responsibly as you can imagine, which is why that I think that November 28th deadline makes a lot of sense. And for Lane, I think Lane's going to push this as far as he can because he wants to coach and he thinks he's got a good team and he wants to win, right? And I think he's going to let this thing go as long as Ole Miss and LSU or Florida lets him go. And at some point, I expect it to be Ole Miss to put the foot down and say, hey, we're moving on.
That would be the I can't think of a more wild story than this one when it comes to a coaching carousel. I thought we would never see a BK Lincoln Riley situation where you had two powerful coaches leave A programs to go to other A programs. And now here we are. So you feel more confident that Lane is choosing LSU. Why?
Well, we're running out of runway, right? I mean, the cards are on the table. You know, we've seen, obviously, that the Kiffins were Layla and Knox and Landry were in Baton Rouge. So we know it's real, right? It's tangible. We know the communication's been real. And I've always thought that Lane was somebody that was he sees himself right now, I think, realistically, as the best coach in college football. That would be my opinion of how he views himself. Now, for him, he's probably also feels like he's in the prime of his career. Where can he go cash in on those chips? And I think there are a lot of people in his inner circle, including Nick Saban, including Jimmy Sexton, that feel like LSU gives him the best chance to build a sustainable, keyword, underlined it, bold it, italicize it, sustainable national championship contender. And how many teams can do that? How many programs can do that in this day and age of college football? I mean, let's go through it. Ohio State.
Yes.
Oregon. Right.
I'll go there. Yeah.
Right. Georgia.
Yes.
All right. So I counted on one hand. Right. And you can make a conversation here for a team like Indiana and Kurt Cignetti, but it's too small of a sample size. But given what Lane Kiffin has done at Ole Miss, it certainly makes LSU a very attractive place. And I think maybe he looks at Ole Miss and he says, you know what, team like I had last year, a team like I had this year, where maybe the team that I had this year,
outperformed expectations, and maybe the one that I had last year underperformed expectations. And maybe we'll be once in every 3 year type of program that can make a run. At LSU, I feel after 2 to 3 years of building the foundation and getting this thing humming, I can make the same case for Florida, by the way, that we can build a sustainable national championship product. And I think that's where we are. And I think he views, ultimately at the end of the day, the LSU and or Florida job as a better job than Ole Miss. And I also told you that I think some of this comes down to personnel. I also think that when you look at Ole Miss and the roster construction, this is a team that has leaned heavy into the transfer portal. Some of the things that they're doing are very difficult to replicate year after year. What they've done on the offensive line, the mercenaries that they have at that position, give them a ton of credit for just getting good enough on the offensive line, but they are getting recycling bodies year after year. They've done a tremendous job at receiver. That would never be an issue in Oxford. They've done a tremendous job at running back. I don't think that would ever be an issue. Quarterback wouldn't be an issue. Defensive line, they've done a good job, but defensive line is a hard one to replicate.
Yeah.
Right. So when you look at the state of Louisiana or the state of Florida and the type of big bodies that they put out, Mississippi is one of those states as well. But if you look at Louisiana and you look at Florida, there's an attractiveness there that kind of says, okay, we can build something a little bit more sustainable. I Ole Miss, if you were to look at them as a team this year and how they're really kind of put together, I mean, Pete Golding is doing a phenomenal job. But defensively on the back end and what they have there, they're not lighting the world on fire, right? I mean, this is a year-to-year type of thing where they're doing an unbelievable job from a schematic preparation execution standpoint. And I think Lane Kiffin says, all right, everybody sees the good, but I also know the floor of this. And I want to be in a position where I have a ton of confidence in myself and the staff from a schematic execution player development standpoint. But I also want to be able to do that with the best talent available as well. And he's been able to do that at Ole Miss. Give Ole Miss a lot of credit for what they've been able to do. And he's raised the ceiling there considerably. But that being said, I think he probably sees but sees a direct path to a more sustainable life for him, if that kind of makes sense in terms of the coaching element.
And Lane's a big, like, Destiny guy. You know, it's like I haven't been able to watch the full doc, but I've seen bits and pieces. And I could see it. Oh, my daughter dates a kid on the team. My son could play, theoretically, a UI, which is right next to the practice facility. I mean, there's a lot of things going in LSU's favor here. If Lane is not the guy, where are you going next if you're Virg Aulsbury?
Great question. Two guys that stick out to me, my opinion, that I like, would be Kenny Dillingham at Arizona State, who I believe you brought up last time that we talked. I just kind of like the charisma. I like the chest. I like that he thinks that every job that he steps into, that he belongs. And I think you need to have some of that combination of confidence and arrogance where sometimes you don't know which one is which.
Yes. And
I like where he's at. I like how he holds himself accountable. I like how he holds his administration accountable. I think he understands what he needs to win at Arizona State, and he's not afraid to call that out respectfully. So he's the type of guy that I think is intriguing, right? Because it gives you a guy that you can ideally build around. The other guy is Clark Lea, who does it a different way. I think is process oriented. We don't talk about this guy enough. I mean, what is Vandy sitting at right now? 8-2. Right.
Yeah,
if they win the next two games, they could be in the college football playoffs. I mean, we're talking about Vanderbilt. They've done unbelievable things over the last 2 years in terms of what they've been able to accomplish. And this was a guy when he got to Vandy and his first three seasons had two seasons where they won two games. And he said, you know what, this wasn't working. So he threw out the script. He didn't stay married to it. He saw an evolving landscape. And he said, we're the bottom dwellers of the SEC, and if we don't change, we're going to continue to get left behind. So he makes a radical move and goes out and builds his whole program schematically around Diego Pavia and brings Jerry Kill and Tim Beck. And obviously what they do with their offensive line is very unique, right? And this guy, to have that type of belief, that type of confidence. And, you know, I remember talking to my brother about it when he went up to SEC Media Days. I think it was his first one. And he said, I want to bring a national championship to Vanderbilt. And there were some people that laughed, including me. I thought that was just
an unbelievable
statement. And then I sit here and I look at this team and I look at the skins that they have on the wall. And I look at the guy that's in charge, holding the flag, leading the charge. And it's like, man, this dude's got something. And it really kind of surprises me that his name is not more in the mix. And I get it. He's not sexy. Mike Elko wasn't sexy at Texas A&M. And I'm not saying they're all going to work out that way. But there's something about this guy that I think he's got special traits. And last time I was on here, I said, hey, when you're picking a coach, it's a lot like when you're evaluating a player. You got to figure out the traits that you want to bet on. And Clark Lee's ability to take a step back and evaluate in the midst of the college football chaos, hey, what's best for my program going forward? And that's going to be dictated by radical change. That's something that I'm not going to be afraid of stepping into. And I might lose my job if it fails.
Yes.
But I have to do it. I think that is the job. What Kalen DeBoer has done at Alabama, that is the job. Your team gets waxed. Week one, there's a lot of outside noise. What do? Coach them up. Got to get better, right? Week to week. I get it. They lost to Oklahoma. But that's the job. You know, these years of running the table and going undefeated, like, they're really starting to be in the rear view, right? So it's about getting your team bought in to the process, obviously playing their best football at the right time. But, you know, I think Clark Lee, Kenny Dillingham, what we've seen from them, both of them in a short sample size, has been really, really impressive. And almost as a fan of the game, if LSU doesn't get Lane Kiffin, I'm more eager to see if they're capable of being pragmatic and finding a solution that they think fits, that ultimately at the end of the day serves their best interest, instead of just going to chase the biggest name. Except the biggest name here just so happens to be a guy that fits and just so happens to probably be one of the top three coaches in all of college football.
Yeah, I would be. Just from a neutral perspective, knowing what we know about LSU and this search, I would love to see how LSU would react to some real adversity. Just from an outside looking in perspective, I hope that doesn't happen.
Me say this. I'd love to see it, but at the same time, like, I don't know anything about these guys making the decisions. You know, the president was handpicked by the governor, right? The AD was removed as an interim tag. I'm hopeful. And Virgil Osbury, a guy that's been around for a long time, that kind of understands the standard, understands the public standard for what they expect in terms of an LSU head coach. That being said, but like, can you have a rational conversation that leads to a solution of you ending up with a guy like Clark Lee and just tune it out? Oh, we got Clark Lee. We got Vanderbilt. Like, hey, man, we went through our process. We evaluated the guys that we thought fit us. And this is the guy that we're going with, and we're going to back him. You know, and I think that's it, man. You got to have a backbone. You got to know what you want. So many people know how this place tick. And then they ultimately, you know, go a different direction in terms of what they think is best because they're aiming to please instead of doing what they absolutely think is in the best interest of LSU.
Cooper, the most important thing is winning the press conference. And that's the most important thing. Getting the boosters happy.
It doesn't matter if you got to have a press conference every 3 years, you know?
Oh, man. Cooper Patagna is our guest. Check it out. Coop knows ball, all the great YouTube stuff that he does. If you're Florida, I mean, would you still go after those two guys if they don't get Lane? What's your backup plan there?
Yeah, I think Florida's in an interesting spot. I think Eli Drinkwitz makes sense. I think Jed Fish makes a lot of sense. I think Brent Key makes a lot of sense. But Florida, similar to LSU, is in a position where whatever they do, you know, they're going to have to sell that to their fan base, right? But that's okay, right? It's like it puts you really back in a conventional but unconventional thought process, because like I said, these programs are used to really going out there and getting the pick of the litter. Now, with where we are in college football, you have a lot of these guys, Brent Key, Clark Lee, Kenny Dillingham, they're all coaching at programs at which they attended. It's a little bit different. Yeah. Guys are more motivated to stay where they are because they understand the expectations of a Florida, of an LSU. We're like, hey, if you don't get it right, you're out of there in 3 years. I mean, what happens to Kalen DeBoer if Alabama loses to Auburn and they miss the playoffs?
Oh, it's easy to break off.
Well, it's just the noise is easy to see.
Yeah.
Right? And then all of a sudden it becomes emotional. It becomes irrational. And Florida is one of those places that I think it's really interesting where it's like, what is our identity? You know, we went with Billy Napier, CEO, came from the Group of Five ranks, was under Saban. He checked all those boxes. It didn't work out. All right, so what do we do next? Do we go to Jed Fish, who's kind of comparable to a Dan Mullen, who's done a good job personnel-wise, but he's never had anything like the beast that he would have to handle in Florida? Do we go with a guy like Drinkwitz, who's done a really good job at Missouri, who's elevated their talent pool? But over the last 2 years, he's 0-6 versus top 25 competition in the SEC, right? All these guys are going to have blemishes, so you have to figure out the flaw that you want to live with. And Fish and Drink are offensive gurus, right? That is something that I think a lot of teams are going to be drawn to. But a guy like Brent Key, to me, what I'm looking for in coaches are guys that exceed expectations. Yes. Clark Lee at Vandy has exceeded expectations. Brent Key at Georgia Tech has exceeded expectations. You know, when he got the job, I thought, wow, that's lazy. You know, he went down the stretch. They're just going to give it to Brent Key. He goes out there, and what this guy's done in the state of Georgia in terms of recruiting and what they've been able to do, he's been a little bit of a thorn in Kirby Smart's side.
Yeah, people it's always think, been weird when people talked about Georgia Tech recruiting because – you know, it's in Atlanta, and everybody just thinks, "Oh, well, you should be dominating. You should." But it's more complicated than that.
These guys that continue to do more with less at places that have traditionally not succeeded in the way that some of these guys are succeeding are the guys that intrigue me. And Brent Key is certainly one of those guys, and what he's been able to establish along the offensive side of the line of scrimmage really makes him intriguing as well. And I love his hires. I love the hire of Buster Faulkner.
God,
you know, I like Blake Gideon on the other side. Before that, he had Tyler Santucci. Part of this job, if is you're going to be a CEO coach and you're not going to be a Drink and you're not going to be a Fish and you're not going to be involved in the play calling, is you better be buttoned up in terms of who you're hiring. Some of the best traits of these coaches that aren't involved on either side of the ball is to establish an identity in your team. And then outside of that, really your main job and your main objective during the season that not a lot of people are thinking about is projecting success. I know Santucci is a name that's heating up. I better have the next guy in the ringer. Right.
Yeah.
And that's it. Buster Faulkner is going to be one of those guys. He's going to get picked off. Who do I got next? Right. And you look at guys like Shane Beamer. And he hired Dow Loggins, and he took a lot of heat for it. Dow Loggins did perform well at South Carolina, goes to App State, gets a head coaching job. Who do you have to replace him? Oh, you're kind of on your heels. All right, I got Mike Shula. All right, that's one and done. Those things can sink you in a hurry if you don't have it right. It's the same thing that sunk Brian Kelly. There are a lot of things that sunk Brian Kelly. But you had Matt House and you had Joe Sloan, and those two guys, when you're a hands-off coach, those are the guys that are the leader of your two units. They better be right. So you have to have guys that can overcome. Like, let's look at Orgeron, an extreme example. He had Joe Brady, he had Dave Aranda.
Crazy.
Right? And he had an extreme level of talent, but he had the right guys to get it going. So Brent Key, to me, has got some stuff. But if I'm Florida, I don't know. It's like I like what Billy did, high school recruiting. To me, it just came down to, like, execution. So I would try to keep really the blueprint that they've had from high school recruiting, that level of continuity, what they've been able to do, especially geographically. I would try to keep that in place as much as possible. And if I had a guy like Fish, who's coming from a a Pac-12 footprint.
And just for clarity, and really quickly, Jed Fish is the coach at Washington, and the year before he was a coach at Arizona. All right, so I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. And Fish coached Territory at McMillan, and now he's at Washington with Williams at quarterback. So he's a good coach, right? Obviously, because we're mostly SEC focused, we know you do all of it, but I just want to – I think most of the audience knows who it is, but I know this is the first time his name has really been brought up here. But you like Jed.
I do like Jed, and I think Jed is a guy that's overachieved. But what I think is going to hurt Jed here is that, you know, this was a guy that rebuilt an abysmal Arizona program. Abysmal. Yeah. They were bad. And then I believe in his second season won 10 games. And then he's off to Washington, and less than 2 years into UW, it's like, hold on, what's the next job? You know, if this guy would have stayed four years at Arizona, he'd be walking down this job at Florida.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the way that I look at it. But yeah, I mean, Florida's going to be interesting, man. I mean, that's a different place. I mean, to me, I kind of look at it as, if you were to ask Mario Cristobal and Mike Norvell, or not Mike Norvell, maybe the next coach of Florida State, who would scare you? Who would scare you that we could go higher right now? You know, and who would that guy be? Drink probably has a little bit of that. Fish, I don't know. I think ironically, I think James Franklin was kind of waiting on Florida a little bit. So, you know, we'll see. I don't know. They're in an interesting spot.
And then, of course, you still have Auburn and Penn State open. And I don't even know what to think. Obviously, you know, Summerall's been just the too obvious guy connected to it because of his ties to Auburn. But I've followed Athletic Director Cohen for a while now. Actually knew their previous AD who played baseball under Manieri, ironically, Alan Green. So I'm trying to figure out what they're going to do.
I think it's, from what I understand, Summerall, Drinkwitz, Durkin, and Clark Lee. And Drinkwitz is the name that's kind of picking up a little heat. I think it's going to be Summerall or Drinkwitz. If I had to bet money.
Is this another 6 out of 10?
Maybe higher, honestly. I think whatever it is, it's probably going to be one of those two, and then you'll probably see Durkin retained, I would imagine.
Durkin's the best DC in the SEC.
He's pretty darn good. And and here's the thing about the Auburn job. I mean, obviously some tweaks on the offensive line. You're going to have to retain Cam Coleman. They got a lot of other talented receivers as well. But, like, defensively, if you're to have that continuity with DJ Durkin and Eli Drinkwitz can add his touch offensively, that job becomes very appealing. Drink is very easy to talk yourself into there. And I think almost kind of makes more sense because of the overlap in the footprint geographically for him from a recruiting standpoint. You know, Missouri has some involvement in Alabama. I think he's familiar with it. I think Auburn's one of those jobs they'd be willing. You know, obviously we didn't see that with Hugh Freeze, but I would expect more success, be willing to kind of grow with Eli Drinkwitz. So I think that job would make sense for him.
Yeah, I'm not as well plugged in as you are. Obviously, you've worked at all these different schools. You're a 247 transfer expert, but I have heard Drink is a bit of a wandering eye here. And I would love him at LSU. I would absolutely adore him here. And I've been met with blowback here. So let's just say Lane doesn't go to LSU. Eli Drinkwitz, head coach at LSU, would make you feel like what?
You know, I mean, I think.
Really? Okay.
The thing is, man, we know what the expectation is, right?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. There's not many guys out there that you feel completely confident in delivering that. And I think Lane is one of the unique ones. And then outside of that, it's like, all right, kind of what is it that you want? And it just depends. It's a total flavor pitch. I think it's more of, yeah, we're confident. This guy has turned around Missouri. He's elevated Missouri. He's done a tremendous job, especially, like, I give him credit for the job that they've done in the trenches, the job that he's done, especially establishing the running identity at Missouri. And then the job that they continue to do off the edge. I mean, they do a tremendous job. Guys like Damon Wilson, Zion Young, Darius Smith, they've been super active in the portal. So I really like him from a talent acquisition standpoint. I just wonder what's the ceiling, right? It becomes a ceiling game there for me a little bit. And I think with all these guys, you're asking that question. That's what I keep going back to is the thought exercise. Who is that guy, that candidate that you believe has the potential traits to break that glass ceiling?
Question for you, and I got in a pretty lively debate, and it got passed around a little bit. There's no program I watch more outside of LSU than Tennessee. All right, so you had kind of this fallout rage over the job Josh Heupel's doing, and you know, you had some crazy folks say he should be fired and all of that. You know, I don't know what I would do with my career if I was Josh Heupel and one of these jobs called me and said, "Hey, are you interested?" How do you feel about him?
I like Josh Heupel. Why in the hell would they ever look for anybody different? This dude had to get a new quarterback in the spring and has his team competitive. Yes. I mean, the expectations for Tennessee this year were relatively low.
Yes.
6-7 win team. And they'll what at this point? Probably be a what? 9-win team?
If they beat Vanderbilt, yeah.
Right. So I think Josh Heupel's a heck of a coach. I think where he is right now, I think a lot of it comes down to personnel and what they do offensively, schematically. That quarterback position is really important. And we saw it at the top with a guy like Hendon Hooker. And then after that, it was Joe Milton, and then it was Nico, and then it was obviously Joey Aguilar. And now you got Faison Brannan coming in, who's the number two player in the country, right? So I love what they've done defensively as well. Tennessee was not a place that was known for their consistency in terms of recruiting. I really like the job that they've done from a talent acquisition standpoint. I mean, you think about the guys that they brought in the portal. Colton Hood, a guy that was certainly overlooked, started his career at Auburn, then goes to Colorado, and then transferred to Tennessee. Now we're talking about this guy's a redshirt sophomore going in the first round. Ty Redmond playing as a corner because Jermond McCoy's hurt. Sam Pendleton, they plug in from Notre Dame. Star Thomas, change of pace back. Like, dude, I mean, what are we talking about?
Yeah, he's good. You
know, I'm not going to go there, but it frustrates.
No, go
me.
There, Cooper.
Like, no, but it's like, what do you want? What more can you want? I get it. Everybody wants to win. There are a lot of programs that are out there that want to win, that are competitive. Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss. Everybody wants a piece of this. You got to fit in somewhere. And I'm not saying Tennessee can't be that team that can't break through. What I'm saying is they're in the mix, man. Like they're in the conversation every single year. They're in the mix. And it's a couple tweaks here and a couple tweaks there, and they got to continue to refine it just like every team does. But, like, what are you going to do? You're going to move on from Josh Heupel, then what?
Yeah, and that's my thing is, like, let me just throw this out here. I mean, Josh Heupel at LSU would be what?
I like it, man. I mean, I do. I honestly think that's another one that's – I think if LSU missed on Lane Kiffin, it would be within their nature. It would be very well be within their nature to go get a temperature check over there in Knoxville.
Dude, I understand. I'm a Heupel fanboy, but I will get in a gazillion. And it was on Blake's show last night, and it got heated. Okay, I can't believe I was defending a guy that went to a playoff last year's honor, but. The dude can flat out coach tackle football. That's all there is to it. And I like guys that are good at that. Before we go, you know, it is interesting that we haven't really brought up defensive names. And I heard you faintly mention that you would be leaning towards an offensive-minded head coach. part of the debate last night was that, and we both agreed, Blake and I, that it was a we would lean towards an offensive-minded head coach. But, you know, I guess I would be fine with it, the right defensive coach. It would just depend on who it is.
I think one of the most important attributes that a head coach can have is emotional IQ. And what I mean by that is you need to have a heightened sense of two things, program awareness and self-awareness. So you need to understand what it is that you bring to the table and that you do well. And what are those strengths that you can play on? And what are those strengths that your team can take from you and they can build on? And then the areas where you feel like, hey, I have to delegate, and that's not a trait that I can actually develop myself, then I have to put my team in the best position and surround them with somebody that ultimately at the end of the day can cover, for lack of a better term, that blind spot. It's what Brian Kelly did not do, right? Everything that I mentioned with Clark Lea is proof and evidence that he's capable of doing that. Radical change. And not every situation calls for radical change, but doing what you need to do on a week-to-week basis. That could be benching a Garrett Nussmeier versus Southeastern Louisiana, having the confidence that he's going to do what he needs to do to get right and get healthy, putting in Michael Van Buren and kind of seeing what you have with him. It could be little things like that. It could be going to Carius Kern earlier in the season or repping him at right guard, even though you think you got it figured out, left guard in this situation.
Right.
And cross-training him. It could be a multitude of things. It could say, saying, you know what, I like Weston Davis, I like Tyree Adams, but it's my job as a gatekeeper of this program, I got to bring in a veteran tackle, and I got to make those guys beat them out. We have too good of a football team, and it's not fair to everybody else. That's your job, specifically, going through the roster, looking at every single position, and then doing that with your coaching staff. Do I have the right guy that's going to get the most out of these guys? You know, and you know, I use BK as an example. I have a Heisman-winning quarterback in Jaden Daniels. I have a guy that's got top five ability. I have an offense that has Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. on it. Guys, we just got to be average on defense. We got to be average. You know, so it's those guys. It's critical thinkers. It's innovators. In a game that is like coaching and managing in quicksand, you have to have people that can come up with solutions quickly. I think that's important. That really doesn't have anything to do if you're on the offense or defensive side of the ball. So guys like, Clark Lea come to mind. John Summerall, certainly. I mean, he's a defensive-minded coach.
Yeah.
I mean, like John Summerall, for example, two examples I think of. People are trying to figure Summerall out. Summerall had Ty Thompson that he brought in from Oregon. He had, I believe, another quarterback he brought in from Ball State 2 years ago. And he goes with the little known, nobody knew, Darian Mensah as his starting quarterback, a guy that ends up earning $8 million over 2 years from Duke. The next year, doesn't feel good about his quarterback situation, doesn't feel like he's got the guy. Goes out, Jake Retzliff falls in his lap.
Let's go.
Opportunistic. That's the part of the job, man. And, you know, and he's got a team that he thinks he can compete and win the AAC. And, you know, you heard him this week. Like, I think the timing of it is not a coincidence, but he's like, you know, my team is average. We practice average. That's a great soundbite, but I think that gives a little bit of an insight into his mentality. Essentially saying, hey, man, like, yeah, we're ranked top 25. You know, in our heads, we think we're here, but if we continue to play the way that we play, you know, we're going to end up like we did last year, 9-5, falling short of expectations. So that's what it's about. You know, it's about like week to week. What do you got to do, man? Problem solving. That's the entire job. Problem solving and maximizing potential.
That's it. People love your decorations.
I know, dude. I'm at my my in-laws, my wife's childhood room right now.
So, what? You took time away from the in-laws to join the powerful PHL nation?
They know the deal, dude.
Dude, the in-laws.
They know it's Power Hour.
Yeah, dude, and look, tell whoever. And
do I get part of that $1.99 right there for that comment?
I'll send it to you. Well, we're doing it.
Send me a dollar.
Yeah. What? I'm gonna send it right now. So who of your family members do you think was it the father-in-law or the mother-in-law that has a plant back there? Who do you think made that decision?
Yeah, mother-in-law for sure.
Okay. And this is in Nashville, correct?
No, man. It's Louisiana. Back in the
So are we fully moved into God's country?
Not yet. Not yet. Oh, okay. Two more months.
We're just setting this.
We're settling in, man.
Okay. I'm sending it right now. And it's funny because Jordan has become one of my best buddies. I even went one step further. So,
gave me the full $2.
Yeah, gave you the full two.
Gave me the extra cent. Love that, man.
The funny thing is YouTube only gives, I only get like 55% of this. So,
really,
yeah, man. When you get deeper into the YouTube weeds, you'll see you're well on your way, man. Well, what's your sub count right now?
My sub count, I didn't do a video this week, which I hate. That bothered me. I was a little banged up earlier in the week.
Banged up.
And some flu-like symptoms. but I think I'm at 440 is where I'm at currently. I'd like to get to 1,000 maybe by the end of January, which I think if you got people on here, you want to know what's going on in the transfer portal, I'm your guy. I promise.
All right. So here's the thing. I am not leaving my stream tonight until we get to 444. Let's make it.
That fires me up.
Yeah, we need to get at least two people subbing.
We're gonna have you on the show too, man.
I would love to do it, man. I also want to. So I don't know Josh Pate. I know you and him are friends, and I don't know if you're friends with Cole Kublik. Cole's a friend of mine as well. He butchered your name.
Mm-hmm.
Cube, man, come on, bro.
He's been doing it for a while too.
Really?
And I texted him a while ago and was like, hey, man, you know, you don't want to come off as that guy. I don't really care.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But I'm like, you know, I did it for him. I'm like, hey, it's Potagna. And he just liked the message. And I think I hopped on a couple weeks later and he's like, hey, Cooper Potanga. I'm like, damn, dude. So I think the only way to get him right is you got to get the big dog involved. You know,
you gotta get Pate runs. Pate runs shit now.
Pate will, yeah. I mean, Pate will. Anytime he's got an opportunity to pull one over on you, he's going to do it. So I think he enjoyed being able to, you know, big brother his little brother there, Cole Kublik, which Cole probably thinks it's the other way around, which I would imagine.
Right. So we're at 444, and we hit it. There we go.
That's love it. That. Thank you, buddy.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, you can, and I want people to go listen to the old interviews because they do get dated. But you will see our connection because at first you and your brother and I were really close. That was one of the first people I ever met at LSU. He's a very talented realtor. If you're in New Orleans, hit up my guy Jansen Potagna, and your dad actually runs the operation. I wouldn't want Jansen running the operation. Your wonderful father runs the operation. Is that true? That's true, correct?
Jansen runs the operation. My father, Brent, is there helping him out, doing a phenomenal job. Very proud of them both, man.
But Brent,
they need to sponsor your show is what we need.
Yeah, well, I'm not much. I'm not what QT is paying Pate. I'll put it that. Funny thing about the QT thing. I always feel weird when I introduce myself to recruits that I just see around, but I stopped at a QT in Ruston, And I don't follow high school recruiting as close as I used to, but I see someone with a Rustin Letterman jacket and it was 6'6". I didn't even need to look at his face. That's Ahmad Hudson. And I didn't say anything to him. He was in a rush, but you're big on prospect evaluation. And anytime you see someone 6'6", you're like, okay, that's the guy that has the 247 profile.
That kid, you know, I'm out of the high school game now too, but he was one of the last kids I watched. Holy smokes, man. You're talking about very different creature there. That kid leaves an impression for sure. You know, what's he, a 2027?
He's a 2027. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of those guys. Like, holy, you know what, you know? He's a dude.
You know, and the reason I want people to go listen to the other interviews, and why your media success is so important to me, you'll learn why if you listen to the other interviews. You can learn about Will Campbell's eval, all these different things that we have discussed. This is your third time on the channel. But, you know, it's so interesting to me, prospect evaluation, because the thing that is getting lost in the middle of all of this coaching search stuff is you think of the strong-ass programs that exist right now in the SEC. And you look at what Oklahoma's done. They go get Jim Nagy. And then you look at Georgia. Georgia's Georgia. And then you got all these other programs.
All right, hold on real quick. Let me give Georgia a shout-out because they got a Louisiana boy doing a phenomenal job there. That's Will Myers, who went to Neville High School. And he is their director of player personnel. And I hear all this talk about, oh, Georgia doesn't have a GM. Georgia doesn't have a GM. This dude's one of the best in the business. He's incredibly sharp. And, you know, he's working right besides Kirby Smart. And not a lot of people know his name. They need to know his name. He's a Louisiana boy. He went to LSU. And I just want to make sure people know who he is because he does a great job.
Will Myers.
Shout out Will Myers, man.
I cannot think of a team in college football, all due respect to Ryan Day and Ohio State. I don't know if I've seen in quite a while a better coach team than Georgia this year. I really like
Bobo's kind of been in his bag, dude.
This is the wildest thing. All right. And you know, Cooper, I have a decent amount of ball knowledge, just not an elite amount, enough for people to respect me doing film studies and all of it. So it was amazing to me when I really started sitting down and watching the little things that Georgia does. You see so many, if you really Zapruder film their film, you see so many little things that they do at such a high freaking level. And then I put LSU tape on and I'm like, what happened? We're in the same conference and they got freaking Bill Gates IBM computers and we're over here communicating with straws on the end of styrofoam cups. That's the difference in how good that they communicate, the coaching, all of it. And I was out and about in Baton Rouge. And when I saw that damn onside kick, I was like, what the hell? What the hell?
That was a soul snatcher, you know?
God.
And it was designed to be that way. Kirby's got the, I call it the foam at the mouth type of competitor. But, I mean, he's to succeed in this conference, you got to have that, no pun intended, that dog in you.
And yes.
Like, Georgia's superpower is, dude, they don't blink, man. I mean,
they don't.
Like, it doesn't matter. It seems when the game gets tight is when they play their best. The fourth quarter against Ole Miss where they scored 17 straight points. They just have a different gear and they believe and they like swimming in the deep end of the pool. And they know that not everybody can swim at that side of the pool. And they're going to try to drown you there. You know, there are some sick pups over there, man. Like that's how they operate.
Dude, their offensive line was a disaster in the first couple of weeks. Disaster. No problem. And that's the thing, you know, when I hear some defenses of BK and how bad the O-line's been. I'm like, yeah, well, Georgia figured it out. Now, I understand we don't have Monroe Freeling, and we don't have some of the dudes, and their players are better than ours. But it was a mess in those couple
of years. Dude, they got two freshmen, and Gaston, who's a great player, going to be a great player. Dontrell Glover, who's probably a center, who's playing guard. You know, Ernest Green's been banged up. Bo Hewley's had to step in. Got to give a ton of credit to Bobo. I mean, he's not just Mike Bobo, but Drew Bobo. Drew Bobo, his son, is a starting center. And then, you know, Freeling. I mean, you go back, you watch Freeling against Notre Dame. He had a rough outing in the playoffs there, and he was a big issue. So, dude, I'll tell you this. Their quarterback makes it go. I was a big critic of his coming out of high school.
Really?
I was, yeah. And, you know, I think seeing him develop as a passer week to week and the confidence that he has, and there's something about the guys that play that position for Kirby Smart that just have this kind of like they're unflappable. And I think Kirby kind of resonates with the Gunnar Stocktons and the Stetson Bennett's of the world. I mean, think about all the talent that they've had, and then think about the guys that they've had success with in that quarterback room. I mean, they had Eason, Justin Fields, and it ends up being guys like the mailman Stetson Bennett and Gunnar Stockton. You know, both guys that are hovering around 6'1" and don't have all the traits, but they know how to play the position and they're tough. And Kirby's stacked the pond with, you know, he's checked every other box at every other position, you know, so, yeah.
Mm. Well, I'll let you get back to hanging out with the in-laws and,
thanks, brother.
Yeah. I kept you for longer than I thought, but it was Jordan that got us that made me feel terrible that I'm taking you away from your in-law family time, because I myself am really close to my in-laws. I spent a lot of time with my in-laws and their dogs and then everything like that. So,
all right, let's end it on this for me.
Okay.
Cause I like this, because last time I ended it with a question as well.
Yeah.
Four jobs. Let's call it four jobs. LSU, Auburn, Florida, Ole Miss, in this hypothetical, who do they hire? Okay. And obviously the Ole Miss job is open under the assumption that Lane is going somewhere else.
Okay, I'll go first because I did last time. All right. I'll go Auburn does the most shocking thing in the history of college football. And we get the most Jimmy Sexton smokescreen job we have ever seen. And Lane Kiffin goes to the Plains. And
that's wild.
I swear to God, if Jimmy Sexton pulls that off, it is the absolute he would be opening for David Copperfield in Vegas, because there would never have been a sleight of hand in the history of anything that would beat that. But no, I think I would go Lane, LSU. I would go Auburn. They do promote DJ Durkin. Let's go Florida. They can't do Alex Golsh. They just can't. That just cannot happen with them hiring Napier, a non-P4 up there. So for Florida, let's go Eli Drinkwitz, and then Ole Miss takes John Summerall in-house thing, and then of course, you know. So
I like it.
Yeah. So let's hear what you have.
I'll go LSU gets Lane Kiffin. Auburn's interesting. I truly think it would be really difficult for Auburn to pass up Eli Drinkwitz if they're able to retain DJ Durkin.
God, dude, that would be sick.
So let's go Drink there. Let's go Summerall at Ole Miss. And then Florida. Yeah, Florida's tough. Florida, in my opinion, would be Jed Fish or Brent Key. And I'm going to go with Brent Key.
There we go. All right, Cooper, we'll talk soon. Tell the family I said hello, and there you go.
Appreciate it, dude. Thank you.
Please go subscribe. We helped his subscriber count go up. As you can see, Cooper, the funny thing is he's good. He got three more since I spammed it, okay? As you can see, I'm very selective with guests. We've only had elite guests here on PHL. We had the guy who broke this story of Lane Kiffin's family visiting BR. So there you go. Let's go to All Gas, No Breaks. That's sad he knows more people on the roster than you do. On Georgia's roster? Oh, well, do you want to go down All Georgia's roster? I will happily do it. I love watching Georgia play. So their wide receiver room is Zachariah Branch. That's their best guy. That's their slot guy. They just lost Colby Young. And now with him and their freshman, Taylen Tucker, I believe, number 11, their wide receiver rotation has been very wide this year anyway. So they're really deep there. Dylan Bell is obviously the elder statesman of the group. That's a guy that they run all their reverses with and their reverse actions. Oscar Delp, Lawson Lucky are their tight ends. 23 Riddell is an up-and-coming tight end. Elias Williams is like their Trey Des Green 6'7 guy. He's not as good as Trey Des Green, but he is a better blocker than Trey Des Green. And then, of course, you know, there's more wide receivers. You got London Humphreys and so on and so on. Okay. So there you go. The defensive coordinator for Georgia is Glenn Schumann. I love it when you guys try and test me on this. Okay. I love watching Georgia play, but this isn't a Georgia live stream. It kind of became one there for a minute, but I'm never betting against Kirby Smart. And the funny thing is that team very well could be 7-3, 8-4. They have won four games this season that it did not look like they were going to win, but they won. Okay. I have no idea what he's talking about. I did not know I was going to get attacked for Georgia Bulldog football knowledge, which is funny because on Georgia film studies, I always address the audience that I don't know as much about your team as you do. All right. That is one thing I wish more national audiences, national analysts would do, is that it's nearly impossible as a national analyst to know as much about some of these SEC teams as you do. Okay. I wouldn't have Kirk Herbstreit on here and say, Kirk, break down the film of Ori Williams. No, I wouldn't do that. That'd be disrespectful. Now, every one of you could probably do a better job of telling a group of whoever about Ori Williams. But yeah, it's always weird when someone's like, well, you don't know every single. And it's also not a shame if, I mean, Cooper knows a lot about ball. Okay. Take a few more here as my dog comes on in. Make sure we get to all the supers, Jordan and Guitar George. Great guest, super informative. Go La Tech Bulldogs. He did have the plant in there. She had the plant was a thing of beauty. The plant had the Angela Davis afro back there. I love it. Who's their kicker? Oh, what is their kicker's name? Number 91. Who's got a bazooka on him? It slips my mind. I'm not a Georgia or you're not. It might be someone else that you're arguing with. Anyway, Brandon says, what if LSU knows Lane is going to Florida and they're trying to save face? That could be the case. That could very well be the case. But I've heard everything. I've heard every last little thing, which is why I don't do the insider thing. Okay, you really don't know. I should have played hardball and only sent him 79 cents. He was waiting on me to Venmo him that $2. He's like, look, I'm doing this live stream from the in-laws. And I'm gonna need to cash in. Cause I'm sure the wifey was probably told, hey, I'm gonna be on with 20 to 30 minutes with Carter. But as you always say with Cooper, and go back and listen to the other interviews. I was somewhat a part of his media journey. Okay, I was once his boss many moons ago, which is kind of strange to say. I back when I was in a boss position. So there you go. Hey, showing some love on the Twitter. Hayes has been the leader of the lane train. Let's go to Dusty on Facebook. Do you think the contract will be 10 years or we shrink it down a bit? Yeah, I don't know what the actual language of the contract would be. I really don't. Okay. Peyton Woodring. How could I not remember his name after that onside kick? And of course, I actually like Woodring's swag. So he wears number 91. That's a good kicker's number. And he also wears the compression Steph Curry leg pants. It's a good look. That's right. Woodring is from Louisiana. Wait, hold on. Was it Lafayette? It is Lafayette. I thought it was Alexandria. Yes, Peyton Woodring from Lafayette, Louisiana. Kid is a monster. Who is the best offensive coordinator available? Available as in unemployed? That's tough to really say. Let's go to Brandon. Billy Napier, offensive coordinator. It would not shock me if Bobo walks off into the sunset if Georgia wins it all this year and Billy's their offensive coordinator next year. Besides you, Victoria. What's up, Vic? Late to the party, but hi. Good to see you. Could you imagine? This was something, and I thought I was never going to release the, when Cooper asked me the prediction, I thought I was never going to take that take out of the chamber, but it would be it wouldn't totally shock me, but Lane likes the dramatics. I understand he's torn over this decision, but some people that are put in a position of conflict like Lane is right now, which is ironic because what Lane does better than anyone else is put defenders in conflict with formational advantages and all of that. But, you know, for me, I do think Lane Kiffin coaching at Auburn next season would be insane. Would be absolutely insane. But it would also be the Jimmy Sexton masterclass. Okay. Yeah, I had a few of you watching on Twitter say, Why are y'all talking about Georgia for so long? I didn't know that angered so many people, us waxing poetic about the Dogs. But I do part of why I do that is because number one, Georgia's been the number one team on the SEC channel, and they've actually been the team that's blown up my TikTok. All right, which is something I just do off to the side. I don't really see I don't know if I would consider myself a TikToker. But that's why I put that on the screen. I watch a lot of Georgia. But part of it from an LSU perspective, though, is to say that, yes, Georgia's got the best players. They really, really, really do have the best players. The coaching is unreal, though. Like, it is truly crazy how good they are coached. What they have going on is one of the best head coaching OC DC operations I can remember, in particular on offense. Kiffin O'Reilly. It's interesting, E. Hill, because that was what I was bringing up back in 2001. Lane Kiffin or Lincoln Riley? I say 2001, 2021. Those are my top two candidates. By far my top two candidates. And I actually went back to listen again to make sure I'm telling you guys a gazillion percent truth. You'd have to scroll down a little bit to my older videos. But yeah, and I was on the record. I was like, those would be the two guys that I would go for. And I didn't know Brian Kelly was available. And on the surface, it was a good hire. And I said, yeah, it was a good hire. But Lincoln Riley could still coach. If we got Lincoln Riley and DeAnton Lynn, I understand that that would be a pretty shocking jump from Cali to where we are right now. But there you go. Let's go to H-Town Rebs. Florida is out of the picture. It's between Ole Miss and LSU. Okay. All right, y'all. That'll do it for me. If you want more live stream coverage, you can go to AYS. He's obviously, I would guess Blake is live right now. If you want film reviews, I saw someone request, what about some film study here? Well, I did a film study yesterday on Lane Kiffin, and it was ironic. I got a ton of messages about how much they enjoyed the film study. But right now, people just want news. Is it happening or is it not? But I've already posted a Lane Kiffin film study. The biggest problem he fixes for us. You can check it out for yourself. And there you go. Big thanks to our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast Roofing. Fortify your roof today and save up to 30% on your homeowner's insurance. And then on top of that, our friends at Laborde Therapy, 5 different locations in the Lafayette region, labordetherapy.com. Okay? It is Power Hour LSU. Boom! Jordan, that's funny because I got compared to that legend. Tonight, we are doing pot roast. Let's go.